To be where I am now, it takes 40 years to be where I am. Because why? I need to travel, see, learn. It's not about I just graduated from culinary school, I want to be a chef and owner. That's not right.
Welcome to The Lighthouse Conversations, a podcast where we feature entrepreneurs and tastemakers from the world of arts, culture, tech, and of course, food. I'm Hashim Montasser, co-founder of The Lighthouse. We're continuing our food theme this month with a chef who's made a tremendous mark in the culinary scene in Dubai. Reef Othman has spearheaded kitchens at the likes of Zuma, Billionaire Mansion, and most recently at his own venture, Reef Koshiaki. But what many of you probably don't know is that he started out as a commodities broker, a career that lasted a whole 6 months.
I was trying to do food and a little bit of a business side. And I did a broker as commodity brokers for, you know, yeah, anything. Yeah, I did for 6 months and I don't feel right wearing suits, ties, talking about numbers, shares. I mean, this is just...
Not for me.
Not
for you.
Yeah, then I said, I switch out and I said, yeah, I think I have to go with my passion, you know.
Growing up in Singapore, he would accompany his mother to the market and that's how his interest in food was initially sparked.
We used to have a small little store selling like, you know, my cuisine, like Malay cuisine. And that's where it started, you know. And every morning I would help up in the morning in a shop, peeling onions, peeling garlic. It was pretty tough, though. But to see a simple stuff, just a potato, just imagine. You can make 100 of dishes out of it.
Yeah.
And he said, wow, you know. And I said, wow, this is amazing. So I think, that's where I started to love about food, though.
So you learned about food, but in a way, because you had a stall, so it was a commercial business.
Yeah.
You learned about business as well, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because definitely. It wasn't just learning about food, you had to sell the food.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have to know, make sure, you know, the cost is good, everything, da-da-da, you know. But yeah, it's...
And why was it Malay cuisine?
My mom is Malay, you're Muslim anyway. Yeah. So I think...
So that's her background.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's where it started. It's not Western, it's not Italian, you know, it's just pure like home cooking kind of stuff. And I think I see myself where such cuisine will not bring me to the next level. So in between my school, I'll go working part-time in an Italian restaurant doing pizza. And then next day, maybe I'm doing a bit of French cooking. So, you know, I do a few part-times here and there during my school days. So I think that's where it get me a lot of interest in F&B, you know.
And so, then what happened after you graduated? So you how did you start the business?
So what is that? Once I finished, I went into Shatec Culinary School without my dad knows. It's my mom money because my dad wants me to be in the corporate world. Yeah, so...
Back to the stockbroker.
My dad running Estee Lauder company before in Southeast Asia. So you know, I mean, that is like, you know, and I don't like that, you know. So I told my mom, keep quiet. Let's do this behind the door, you know. So yeah, so I did it. Finish up 2 years, then work around in Singapore. Les Amis, the first French fine dining in Singapore, which the chef is a local Singaporean. Flew up to France to do training and work. So back then he was like my idol, you know. I said, well, I want to be like him one day, where in a Singaporean, you know, to be somewhere and Muslim. Because we being Muslim, as you know, we can't touch alcohol, you can't touch pork, you can't touch a lot of...
And a minority in Singapore.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I want to bypass that and to show that, you know, yeah, I can do it. I did a 1 year Europe tour without salary. I saved my money. Just to learn with my backpack. I sleep in the restaurant and I shower in the kitchen. Just, you know, to keep me alive and work for free.
But what gave you this drive?
I guess I don't know.
You could have stayed in Singapore and been a very good chef and, you know, earned a nice salary. And I'm not saying this in a bad way.
100%, yeah. What is that? Bring back to my childhood days, I'm a very naughty kid. Mm. To the level whereby, you know, let's not talk about it, you know. So, but not into the jail, you know.
But you got in trouble, yeah.
But no drugs, for sure, yeah. To one point, my head chef in Les Amis was saying, listen, young man, I can see that you're very motivated, passionate about what you're doing. You got to wake up and do what you want to do in your life. So that gave me a little bit of like a wake-up call. And second, my dad was like, you know, you won't go far being a chef, you know, da-da-da, you won't earn good money. That gave me a little bit of like motivation too.
I wanted to prove him wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hell, all right, I'm going to prove you, you know. So along that line, working with all French chefs abroad, all Michelin star coming to the hotel, da-da-da, And I just want to see myself, by back days, a lot of things are all imported from France, from Italy. And I want to see how asparagus grow. How do they hand dive scallops? I want to see all this, you know. And that, I say, okay, listen, I'm going to save my money up. I'm going to travel. Because learning from books, looking at cookbooks, looking at such things in the television, is not the same when you go on field. And you start to understand soil, the sun, you know, bees, everything. The nature.
Yeah, how it's all connected. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and how things ship around the world.
As he wrapped up his year in Europe, his former chef from Raffles asked him if he wanted to explore an opportunity in Dubai at the Burj Al Arab, which brought him to the city in 2004.
Well, Burj Al Arab, 1 year, it was my contract. And I told my chef, I said, listen, you know, I think this is not working for me. You know, back there, there's no Burj Khalifa, there's no Mall Emirates, there's no Dubai Mall. You just imagine, you know, it's pretty painful, you know. And I said, no, I went back to Singapore. Obviously got married, and I run a restaurant, a group chain that I run for a while, for about 3 years. Then that's where Zuma knocked on the door, right? So yeah.
And you came to Zuma expecting what? Because I mean, obviously we all know Zuma now, yeah, with a major success.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it was one of the first. So I was here as well. I arrived in 2005, and I worked in DIFC, so I remember the opening of Zuma. And people weren't sure, those types of level restaurants haven't been here yet. And it became an explosion, an absolute roaring success. So tell us a little bit about your experience there.
Yeah, well, I guess I got appointed at 2009. Yeah, I was with them, and it just opened about a year and a half as a chef. Back then, we have, of course, another chef, Colin, was there, and just, you know, taking along with him. And yeah, so I got the new role, taking over Zuma, running Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Turkey, Middle East.
Amazing.
Opening the, what is that, in Miami. The last project was Zuma Rome. So, yeah, and of course, my aim to be in there to understand the fundamental of the business. Because how can they be so successful?
Yes.
Why?
And Zuma, you know, Dubai especially. I
mean, yes, yeah, it is.
Out of control success.
They are the biggest...
revenue provider in all of Zuma Group.
Yes, and they are the biggest... And me, myself, like I said, every day we have a lot of complaints, you know, about food, you know, quality, the sauce is not right. Then I bring back to what I have learned before, those days in American chain. Because Americans are good in recipes,
standardizing. Yeah.
So that's why I say, okay, crack on. So I just revise the recipe, just putting it all in line and keep on taste until to be where they are now.
I mean, 10 years later, Zuma's probably still, you know, one, if not the most successful restaurant in Dubai. Mm. It's timeless in a way. And this is not just about the food, which has obviously been excellent, but the whole atmosphere. I mean, the interior design, the feel, the music, the bar, everything works well together.
Yes, yes. And you know, Rainer, you know, he's a chef as well, and he's been working in Japan. So he put his heart and soul in that place as well, you know.
Reef led the kitchen at Zuma for 6 years, and this is when he felt it was time for a change.
I'm very, very, very proud, and I'm very happy that I make Zuma to be the best restaurant in the world, 100 best by San Pellegrino, for 4 years in a row. So for me, that's the biggest achievement. Whereas back days, if you remember, it's hard to bring things from Japan.
Yeah, it's not like
you
now.
Know, like, not like now. Those days, it's so tough. There's one period of time, there's a tsunami and radioactive. I can't bring anything from Japan because of radiation.
I agree with you. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be able to travel quite a bit. And I don't think I've seen many restaurants like Zuma Dubai, especially at the time when you were there, where literally everything was coming together way. So consistently for so long, despite the fact that it's completely packed every day of the week.
Yeah.
Indeed. That must have been an amazing experience for you.
And I think after 6 years, as you know, it's enough for me. And I had to spend time with my kids because being in Zuma, like, I would say, like...
All-consuming.
It's like flying everywhere, you know. I don't see them. And I need to see them at this stage now, when they are still young. When they are, like, teenage, I don't care, you know. But now it's like...
Or they don't care.
Yeah, exactly. They don't care about us, you know. So I need to be around with them, you know. And whenever there's a sports day, I'm not there, I feel so bad, you know, and you know, my wife is always taking the video and saying, oh my, it's just depressing, you know.
Life is passing
you
by.
Yeah, exactly, you know, so I think I need to enjoy that moment. Mm. And of course, I'm on a very good position in Zuma. I'm running the whole entire outlet, you know.
But I want to talk about this because it's a very difficult position from which to leave. I mean, so you must have had a high degree of self-awareness, because when somebody is doing so well in a certain position, it's very hard to step back and say, you know what, I need to step back, I need to consider my family. Mm. It's something we like to talk about, but in most cases, we talk about it, but we don't do anything about it because you're doing very well. And every year you find a reason to stay longer. So how are you able to pull the trigger?
I think at the end of the day, you know, I was like one period of time, I was like sitting in the balcony and I was thinking myself, I'm a chef. You know, I'm not a businessman. And I want to show Dubai what I'm good at. Not just doing on what I'm doing now, I'm on my comfort zone. Good money, good salary, good package. My wife happy, everything happy, but I'm not happy. Mm. I have to make myself happy. Mm. You know, I have to love myself. 100%. You know, before I love someone else. You know, so by doing that, I say enough. That's it. Because at the end of the day, you know, Zuma, Reiner give me a lot of freedom to do whatever I want. The menu now, I would say like 40% is mine.
Yes. No, I know that very
40%
well.
40% is mine. You know? So, and not only Dubai, even around the world, across the world, you know, they're having my menu and I'm happy with it.
100%.
Yeah. So, and it's not enough, you know, because I don't show my French cooking, I don't show my Italian cooking, I don't show my other side. Because Zuma is the, they are doing very well because why? They believe in the flavors what Reiner wants and I understand what he wants. But nevertheless, you know, I need to show
your
a little bit
thing.
Of, do my own thing, you know, a little bit of, you know, here
your
and there.
Your flavors, your
your
ingredients.
Yeah. But, you know, and he said, this is nice riff, but it's not for Zuma. And I understand that, you know, so.
So you wanted to have that versatility and flexibility.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're fast forwarding to today. I must tell you, Koshiaki, your current restaurant in Dar al-Wasl, which I'm sure you'll describe better than me, but let's just say Japanese street food.
Yeah.
Is my son's favorite restaurant in Dubai.
Yeah,
He, as eight, claims to be very picky, but whenever he wants to celebrate anything, this is where he wants to go.
Oh, nice, so, nice. Bless him.
It means something to him. It means something to us. So I feel a lot of what you've just described came together there. It's your personality. You can be more, you have less guidelines as opposed to a big group like Zuma.
Yeah, yes. I think I had enough of doing high-end, and I think Dubai needs a little bit of mid-market. And I think this is what we need to show and give to the society. And of course, obviously, me traveling around Japan most of the time. And nevertheless, so I was like in Dubai, I was like always looking for affordable, good food, you know, good food. And I said, hey, hang on, why not? Let's do it. So that's where Riff Koshiaki born. You know?
And how would you describe the menu and the elements you wanted to bring in? Because it's not just Japanese.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely. It's more to like, that's why it's unconventional.
Exactly. It's very unconventional.
So what is that? I have the basic of a Japanese technique, but I change a little bit with my French, what is technique at the back of it, you know, and making sure that, you know, quality driven as well. Nothing is cheap, you know, make sure it's always quality, spot on price and spot on of taste. And bottom line is the umami that I'm looking for, which is salty, sweet, and sour, you know, where, you know, it's all everything in your mouth. And on top of that, you can see I have a little bit of a Singaporean dishes that I have.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
where I'm coming from. I think to show kids that, you know, I'm from Singapore and for them to know that this is the real Singaporean dish.
Yes.
You know, rather than I do something out of it whereby, you know, some chef wants to like, okay, this is my style of cuisine. I say, no, man, you have to show your cuisine,
who you are.
So I'm born and raised with this food and I'm sharing with you.
Although less than 6 months old, Riff Koshiaki is already leaving a mark in Dubai's F&B scene. When we come back, how Riff plans to take his restaurant global and how he views his legacy. Stay with us. Hi guys, I wanted to share a little bit about The Lighthouse from where we're bringing you this podcast. The Lighthouse is a restaurant, concept store and activation space all rolled into one at Dubai Design District. From time to time, we'll share more information about what's going on. We recently set up a retail pop-up space on the Palm in the newly opened Nakheel Mall. You can find some of the best-selling Lighthouse books and gifting items at Tipat Chica, the fabulous food hall at Nakheel Mall. And heads up, you can now order our food directly via Instagram, where you can collect a nice 20% off your first order. Just go to the Lighthouse_AE and click on the link in our bio to find the option to order food online. Welcome back. I'm Hashim, and you're listening to the Lighthouse Conversations with our guest, Reef Othman, founder of Reef Koshiaki. Having made his mark as one of Dubai's most celebrated chefs over the past 15 years, Reef is currently putting his weight behind his newest venture, where he's not just worrying about the food, but also about the business.
I think on the business side, I'm not too worried, because luckily the broker side, financial numbers, I understand. And working with Zuma, you know, it's all about numbers as well.
So you feel you've learned that at Zuma?
Yes, exactly. You know, a bit here and there. And nevertheless, doing a lot of openings around, talking with the entrepreneur around me. So I understand a little bit how to run a place.
A business.
Yeah, a business. And yeah, so it's not easy, but it's fun.
How long have you been now running this new restaurant?
4 months now. Four months.
Yeah. And what's the... What have you learned in those 4 months?
I would say nothing is impossible, you know, and it's not tough at all for me. And that's why, you know, I opened a small place, you know, less headache, less stress, you know, and I don't have to think about a lot of things, you know.
Just, but is it less headache and less stress? Because if you're a perfectionist, which I think you are, you still care about the details. So you might have less tables to service.
Yes.
I don't know. I think it's probably a fair amount of headache.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. But, you know, I let it go. Okay. Yeah, I have to. You know, as much as I have my own OCD at home, you know, I have to make sure I, you know, balance, you know. But, you know, I'll do it myself. You know, but, you know, but now the boys starts to know what I like, what I don't like. And I always pinpoint them. And I say, I don't want this to be like this. I want it to be like that. You know, keep on telling them, get in their head. Okay, Chef Reef is here. You know, it's working. Yeah.
And this is remarkable because you told me this, which is very unusual for F&B. Your team has been working with you for how long?
10 years.
Unbelievable. Because, I mean, we all know, I mean, I'm in the business as well. And, you know, it's very difficult to attract, recruit and 100%. Retain talent.
Yeah.
So what's the secret sauce?
I think be with them, listen to them, share with them. I share all my knowledge to them, and I'm very, 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 very happy is not that word, you know. It's just like blessed. Like now with me, I don't give them good salary like those days, you know, and they're getting even half of it or even less than that.
Yeah, because they say,
Chef, it's not about the money. We are happy to work with you.
This is incredible.
Wow, you know, that is like wow, you know. I can't say much. So that's why in my heart, don't worry, you know, I'll take care of you.
They trust you.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, but also over 10 years, they've seen the ups and the downs.
Yeah, of course.
And they know that you will treat them like family.
Yeah, 100%. When I was running Zuma, I have all my team as my part of my family because they are the core. You know, my success is their success. You know, it's vice versa. It's not about me. You know, it's wrong. You know, it's them to make me where I am. You know, because why? I've been traveling around, I always like... pick up a phone, make sure don't screw it up, you know, and you know, they put a point, you know, and that's how I feel, you know, when I feel them, back this, I have 89 staff in the kitchen, and every staff, I know their birthday, I know their anniversary, I know when they need to go back home for vacation, and I know when they're ups and down. So for me, I can pick it up from your face and the character, let's have a coffee, tell me what happened. So you just imagine, you know. So
you're part their boss, part mentor, part therapist,
part father,
part mentor, part father.
Yeah.
It takes some of toll. So what do you do to de-stress? Because I mean, that's small or big. I mean, that's a lot of pressure day to day.
What is that? Me, I just spend time with the kids. I think that's a balance. Yeah, that's a balance. When straight up home, everything switch off. You know, phones aside. Just have time with them.
Do you bring them? Because I know you bring your wife into your work life.
Yeah.
Do you bring your kids into your work life?
Yeah, of course. They have to see by, you know, what is that? Life is not about, you know, everything. You know, you have to learn from scratch. Nothing comes easy. You know, you have to take up from here and take up pieces and understand, like, you know, money doesn't come from sky. You know, you have to work really hard for it, you know. And yeah, they see that and they understand that. So I think they see the value of money, the value of life.
They see how hard you and your wife work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. And yeah, it's been great, though. It's been great.
Now, when you came, as we said, I mean, Zuma was kind of this moment in Dubai, a pivotal moment, really, in terms of the type of restaurant. But also, Zuma was an imported brand from the outside that adapted very, very well to Dubai.
Yes.
There was that rise, because I was here as well, for many more of those types of restaurants that did very well. La Petite Maison comes to mind, and a few
Correct.
Others. And then in the last couple of years, we've seen a shift.
Yes.
Where people became more attracted to or brands that are coming from the ground up. Do you think that trend is going to continue? And also, what would it take to have more of the Koshiakis versus the Zumas in the world? I'm not saying you need one or the other, but if that is what consumers want, something that's pricing that's more accessible, led by a chef or entrepreneur,
right,
from the ground up, it speaks to the palate of Dubai people.
It's going to take some time, though, because still to date, as you can see, still a lot of investors bringing top brands in Dubai, bringing a Michelin star in Dubai. And they already see that this this trend is done.
So why do they keep still making that mistake?
I think they have been I might say they've been fooled by a consultant. Mm. Or you know, investors, or I don't know, you know. I mean, I think they see this coming, you know, and yet let's go for it, you know, and they sell the brand and they don't think about Dubai doesn't need that. And I would like to see Dubai or any entrepreneur or any investor to create their own
brand.
Exactly.
But it's very hard. Yeah. I mean, you open your own brand, you're a celebrated chef, you have a very strong brand. What would you advise other maybe younger chefs that don't have that kind of knowledge or name in the market or young entrepreneurs?
I mean, I think first of all, I think they need to know what Dubai needs, the market, the taste, the palate of Dubai, who you want to cater to. That's the main priority thing. As you know, Dubai is not like other country. We are running in a winter business.
Correct.
But me, I'm year-round business.
Correct.
You know, I want to make sure that my winter is well and my summer is well. If I have to think just winter, then forget about it. If you think that, you know, some chef is always about ego, this is my cuisine, this is how you're supposed to eat. No, you can't. You have to understand also the consumer. You have to understand also the investor, whereby you're putting a lot of money in the restaurant, making sure that they make their money back. It's not about one-way traffic, it's about win-win situation. You know, these are little things whereby, you know, people need to see as well. Nevertheless, a lot of entrepreneurs who are coming in, throw the money and just do everyone, copy.
Correct.
You know, this is not right as well, you know. So there's lack of creativity in the market. And for the young chef who wants to be a chef, they need to travel. To be where I am now, it takes 40 years to be where I am. Yeah. Because why? I need to travel, see, learn. And everything. It's not about, I just graduated from culinary school, I want to be a chef and owner.
Yeah.
That's not right, you know, because you didn't know everything, you know. So it's all, these days, it's all about fame. That's right to say, you know. The chef is in television, I want to be a television chef. Yeah. It doesn't work that way too, you know. So, yeah.
And where do you strike the balance? So there's celebrity chefs around the world, as you well know, that have opened in many places, including Dubai. And at some point after restaurant number, I don't know the number, but let's say 20, 25, 30, they're lending their names to these restaurants and they start doing less and less well because it doesn't feel authentic anymore. So assuming you're at the beginning of your journey, hopefully, inshallah, where do you see, are you concerned about this? That at some point your name is on restaurant number 12, for example, somewhere around the world, and you're not able to be there physically anymore and it doesn't feel the same way Koshiaki feels?
Yeah, what is that? Yeah, the whole idea of having Reef Koshiaki is to make sure that I duplicate everywhere and around the world, which, you know, I want to leave legacy. I don't leave memory, you know, where, you know, they don't need to have me to be in there. The food speaks for itself that this is Reef.
And how do you do that? You franchise it out?
Definitely.
Okay.
So that's my next model of
and
business.
How do you keep the quality high in a franchise model?
Well, I guess, as you know, I have good people around me and, you know, I just delegate them, give a little bit of percentage as an ownership. Listen, run it, and take it from there.
Okay, so to our audience here listening, anyone who's interested in open Koshiaki around the world, they can get in touch with you.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
And you plan to, is your idea to stick with that one brand or diversify in other?
Yeah, I have two more in my head. Okay. Yeah, I want to do, next will be a plant-based restaurant.
Plant-based?
So, plant-based, okay. Basically purely vegetarian, in my take. Not those typical, like, you know, like what they're doing now, but I have my own direction.
What's the second idea in your head?
Second, I want to do a Chinese cuisine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I can't think of a single good Chinese restaurant.
Exactly. That's the point. You know, you have your Hakkasan. I'm going to the mid tier of my journey.
Correct.
So this is the aim. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying out, filling out and see how it goes. So I just, you know, Riff Kushaki just opened for 4 months. I just want to take it slow for now. And then, yeah, next step is to go to London. After London, then I'll do a franchise. So
GCC, why do you want to do London yourself first?
London, I think, is the hub of everywhere. You know,
the entire world.
Yeah, exactly, the entire world. You know,
so it's Singapore in some ways. Why don't you go to Singapore?
Southeast Asia is a bit different, you know, whereas in London, you capture everybody. London, Paris, this is the hub of business, where everybody flying everywhere. You know, let's pop by London. And London has always been a city for food. Why not New York? No, I want to go to London, closest to me. Speaks English, easier, and quality, getting Japanese products easy as well. So everything accessible. So I think after London, and obviously the moment I tap on Europe land, my value is higher.
How do you feel about technology coming into food and restaurant space? We are seeing virtual kitchens, we are seeing a lot of delivery, we are seeing people using apps. Is that something you embrace?
Just no, not at all. To me, I hate delivery.
You hate delivery?
Yeah, I hate delivery. I hate all these apps. I have to be honest, you know.
No, I believe you, but it's there.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah. But what is that? Nevertheless, as you can see now, consumer don't really bother what they eat. You know, they just want to like sit back and relax and enjoy a piece of pizza. Doesn't look like pizza. A nice fried noodle, like, you know, not a noodle anymore, you know. So these are the things whereby the consumer doesn't know what they want at the end of the day. And they portray themselves that, you know, it have good food, da-da-da, but they're not, you know. So, I mean, I don't really fancy delivery at all.
No, I think you're not the, I mean, many chefs share your view. But the reality of it is, if you look at the restaurant, the delivery part is becoming bigger and bigger. Can you go against this trend?
But is that that's a tough one, though, because it's been, as you can see now, you know, it's everywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can't fight, you know, I can't fight. But what I could do is that in my restaurant, I don't do takeaways.
You don't do?
I don't do takeaways. And at the same time as well, if you want to have a good food, you have to get up from your couch and go and enjoy your meal. And that's what it's all about, you know? I mean, rather than, you know, let's say now my food serving hot is pretty nice, but then reach to you, it's just not even lukewarm. And you said, this doesn't taste right, da-da-da-da-da. You know, and I have a lot of people who are having a lot of issue with deliveries. They said, I found hair on the food. Like, how can you judge? Maybe it's your hair, you know? And end up, you know, you don't pay nothing for that delivery. You know, you think it's fair? It's not fair. You know, and it's the food is not here for 30 minutes. Cancel the order whereby it's already on the way. You know, that's a lot of hassle. So why you still want to do that?
Yeah, my personal feeling is like everything else. Maybe it will moderate. So there will always be people that hate delivery and hate food being delivered, and are purists like yourself. And there will be others that don't care as much.
Yeah.
Therefore, what we always tell people is, we are happy to deliver it to you, but understand that the quality of what you're getting may not be identical to obviously being in a place. Also, for humans, in my view, you want to connect with others. So eating in a restaurant is not just about the food. It's also about connecting and the whole experience.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think you're always going to have two types.
I don't mind to do a delivery of maybe just a salad because that's safe.
Right. Things that you don't feel are compromised.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm okay with it. But when it comes to hot food, you know, such things, I'd rather, like, you know, stay away. Like, you know, poke bowl or whatever, it's easy. You know, it's cold, whatever, but not sushi, not maki roll. You know, we don't know what kind of box you have. Is it chill? You know, these are the things, you know, that we need to look into it. You know, but that's what the consumer wants these days. You know, what can we do?
You can't fight the consumer.
But you just need to believe in your brand, need to believe in what you're doing and focus on it. I think that's about it, you know.
Reef is also hard at work at giving back. His current philanthropic initiative is the CR Hope Foundation, focus on school children in Zanzibar.
The kids are very pure, you know, and they pull me not because they want money. They pull me because let's play football. And you see the ball is made of something else, you know, and they're still happy with it. And even some little kids, like, you know, pull me and tell me stories from their storybooks. So I said, I want to give them back. And yeah, the school just opened 3 days ago. I'm very happy.
Congratulations.
It's 3 years of making. Amazing. It wasn't easy to raise.
How many kids go enroll?
Right now, the nursery, we have 34. Okay. After that, then we're going to gradually put in the primary school. And of course, in between, we're going to have one class just for English from 30 years old, 40 years old, if they want to learn English, by all means, you know. So we have that like somewhere in the afternoon.
What's the school called?
Seed of Light.
Seed of Light.
Seed is a children.
Sure.
And you need to nurture them with love, care, and tender.
And you were telling me earlier you will spend part of your summer or maybe your entire summer there.
Yeah, yes. I'm planning to go there this summer for 3 months to teach them culinary. I think teenagers are a lot like, you know, hang around doing nothing. So I want to show some skills, share with them, and at least they can work a lot of hotels around that, and then to give them a future for the family as well, you know, not just hanging around doing nothing, you know. And I think there's a need, and then they're giving back to the society, you know.
Do you see that as part of your legacy? Or speaking about legacy earlier?
Yeah, and definitely, you know, I leave something behind. And my children can pick it up if I'm gone, you know, one day, you know. So it'll be nice.
And what was the reaction in Zanzibar when you went to...
At the beginning, they were happy. Our last trip, not only last trip, okay, just to run up, we have sent 2 tons of clothes, shoes.
Wow.
And the village was like, what the hell does you want? Is there any something behind agenda that you're giving in? And after they see what we are doing, they start to open up their arms. That, you know, it's coming from me, you know, from the heart. I don't want anything.
They got it.
Yeah, they got it, you know, because for them to see, like, an outsider to bring in Crocs, clothes, books, pencils, everything for the village. For them, like, nobody does that. Because a lot of people goes there, I want to buy land, I want to build a hotel. It's all about business. You know, not about them, not about their future, not about giving back to them, you know. And yeah, I think yeah, it's fun and tough, but
that's fun. It's a great initiative. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. And if you've enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you'd give us a review, as it helps more people discover the show. The Lighthouse Conversations is brought to you by The Lighthouse in D3 and is hosted by me, Hesham Montasser, and produced by Chirag Desai. You can find all our episodes for free in your favorite podcast player, as well as on the web at thelighthouse.ae/podcast. We'll see you in 2 weeks.